You'd think, Kirk, that if God, Yahweh, issued an invitation for us to meet with him, that he said and gave us a specific time, and he says it was for your benefit, and that if he did so, and he was offering a time for us to meet and be together, that the vast, the overwhelming preponderance of people would attend. You know, the president offers an invitation to the Pope to come to the White House. He came.
Mm-hmm.
God offered an invitation to meet with him, and he reneged. How is that even feasible that the creator of the universe, someone who absolutely proved his status, his renown, that individual who has the entirety of the ability, the only one with the ability to perfect a soul, to make a soul immortal, to empower and enrich a soul, would be ignored?
Well, Two things come to mind. The first one is the immediate thing is Yahusha sitting on a rock on the Mount of Olives, and I think it was Mount of Olives, and he mm-hmm. said, you know, often I would have called you mm-hmm. Often, and but you didn't respond, you know, yeah. so it's yeah. not unheralded that they wouldn't. But
yeah, in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, I've come in my Father's name, and you did not receive me. One will come in his own name, and him you will receive.
And now today, one in his own title.
Right.
I have to make a comment that's related from the news. There was about three stories, but one of them, uh-huh. I mean three comments. One of them was according to Obama, Authority on All Things Christian.
Oh, yeah.
He said to the Pope as the living embodiment of the teachings of Jesus. Now, put Jesus aside that we know is Dionysus, is what they're really talking about, and just pretend for just a moment it's Yahusha,
mm-hmm.
which means Yahweh saves.
Mm-hmm.
What would Yahusha be celebrating today?
Yom Kippurim.
Mm-hmm. Would he be reading and reciting from the Torah or the Bible or the canon law of, I mean, or the canon yeah. of the, I mean.
Yeah, the Torah.
God.
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, would he be wearing a religious costume?
Absolutely not.
Would he be wearing a sun disc hat on his head?
No.
Would he be carrying a cross with him?
Absolutely not. He never carried a cross.
No. Would he be associated in any possible way with Rome?
He despises Rome.
Right.
He despises Ephraim.
Hey, about Paul's credibility.
I'm sorry, I missed.
What did he have to say about Paul's credibility? Isn't Paul half the author of half of their new
yes,
Testament?
He said he has none. He's a liar. He's a plague of death.
Yeah. And here's this Pope that won't ever say Yahweh's name.
No.
Doesn't know Yahweh's name. Claims that Yahusha spoke Aramaic rather than Hebrew.
Yeah, of course.
Wants to abandon Jerusalem and give Israel to the Muslims. Embraces Islam. And is the leader of the worst beast from Yahweh's perspective, that man has ever created, and they're the same?
Well, that would make him a son of Baal, wouldn't it? SOB? Can we call him SOB on radio?
You know, listen, the Abominator is a despicable man, an absolute disgrace of a human being. And he is he's praising another despicable man.
Yeah.
And so wouldn't you expect these two despicable men to lie to one another? You know, Trump was getting all this flack for not identifying the president as a Christian when he was called a Muslim man by the person attending the political rally.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Trump ought to have said?
Well, I told you what I thought he should have said, because that's what Terry said. You know, he said basically, if you are insulted because you called him a Muslim, why are you insulted? Because what's wrong with a Muslim? Because these people think that's fine.
Right. That'd be a great response. Now, I think that response would be lost on 99% of people, but it is a profound response, which is to say, why is calling him a Muslim man bad? Are you inferring that Muslim is bad?
Yeah.
Now, of course, this particular heckler was. But But for then the supporters of Obama to say that's not right, that's improper, they're inferring that calling somebody a Muslim is bad.
So
it's an insult. Now, the thing I would have said is the overwhelming preponderance of what Obama says is untrue. Most of what comes out of his mouth is a lie.
Sure.
And so why would you choose to believe him when he says he's a Christian and be incapable of recognizing that most everything he says about himself, about America, about the economy, about the world, is untrue?
Yeah.
I mean, are you so naive that you think you should trust him when he makes a declaration about his religion, which is unprovable and unverifiable, but yet not recognize that what he has said about all other things which are verifiable is invalid? Why would you believe him? Why would you believe a man who lies more often than he tells the truth?
Good point.
So, not my business to determine whether or not he is is telling the truth when he says he's a Christian.
Yeah. So even if you ask him, what does that prove? Nothing?
Yes. So, you've got two despicable men. It was also shades of Ben Carson. When Ben Carson says a Muslim should not be a president because he doesn't hold American values, doesn't hold the values that the country was founded on. Now, well, I don't think that a Muslim should be president. I don't think, in fact, and I know no one in the covenant would ever should ever be president.
Uh-huh.
And I would never vote for somebody dumb enough to be religious as the president. And God doesn't give a hoot who is president because he has nothing to do with this country.
And
you shouldn't care either, and you shouldn't be involved in the process. But beyond all of that, the thing that bothers me, it reminds me of when Jerry Falwell called Mohammed a terrorist and didn't know how to support it. Mm-hmm. Knew it was generally true, and it is true. And it is true that no Muslim, no devout good Muslim, can swear an oath to a human constitution. And that Islam itself means submission, and that the Quran tells Muslims that they have no choice in their religion or in their politics.
Or you're a hypocrite. Yeah.
Right. So it is impossible, according to the Quran, to hold the office of president. Now, if Ben Carson, who's a bright man, mm-hmm. had said that, and has said according to the Quran, it's impossible for a devout Muslim to hold the office of president and to swear an oath to defend the U.S. Constitution is why I make that statement.
Uh-huh.
If he had said that, then it would have been a good thing to say. It's the problem I have with so many who have a little tiny bit of truth they're exposed to and they want to go off and tell people about it.
Uh-huh.
Until you're prepared to show evidence and reason behind your statements, you ought not make such statements. You'll do more harm than good.
Sure. Because then people will think you're just nuts.
Yeah, and of course, what did the Muslims do to demonstrate that he's right? They care. The Council on Islamic-American Relations, they went off and said that he should withdraw from the race. He's not qualified to run for president, which is to say, in Islam, if you disagree with Islam, then you are not to have any legitimacy.
Right.
And so what the Muslim did is prove that Ben Carson was right.
All right, right.
Yeah, in Islam, you can't disagree. You must submit.
No, submit, submit, submit.
Yeah. So here is Yahweh. He's offering you an invitation. Now, if it's an invitation, every individual then has the opportunity to accept it or reject it.
All right.
So it's an invitation to be called out and to meet. So the creator of the universe says that this day exists, Hayah, was, is, and will be, a set-apart invitation, Kodesh. When he uses Kodesh, is he referring to an aspect of his nature?
Oh, yeah, set apart.
Yeah, and he is set apart, and the spirit specifically is set apart. The set-apart spirit is the Ruach Kodesh, spirit that is set apart.
Mm-hmm.
Set apart is a really important concept. What does it mean to be set apart?
Well, it means that you're special. You put away as to,
mm-hmm.
and like the Loi, for instance, were set apart to serve mm-hmm. him in the temple.
Right. Now, to be set apart means it's there's two concepts of set apart, two aspects of it. One is you have to be set apart from something, which means that you've left human institutions, religion and politics. You're set apart from those things, and you're set apart unto God. Also, if you are set apart from God's perspective, like a set apart spirit, that's part of God, set apart from Him.
Mm-hmm. Then you're shield.
So it's, yeah, she's not a second person or a third person in the Trinity. She's part of God, set apart from Him. And Yahusha is the most set apart, which means he's
right.
Kodesh Kodesh, which means he's set apart not only from Yahweh, part of Yahweh set apart from Him, but dramatically, dramatically diminished because of the fact that the spirit has to be diminished by the speed of light, multiplied by the speed of light to be to transition into something that's physical.
Into the world of matter. Yeah.
Yeah, into the world of matter. So this is a call out and set apart day to meet, and it says La Etem, for you to approach, concerning you, for you to draw near. So then he speaks of your soul. Now, can you abuse your soul? You ever tried to get in there and whip your soul?
No, you can't. You
can you deprive your soul of nourishment, for example? And if you decide you're not going to eat today, is your soul going to starve?
No, souls don't starve.
No. Is there any way for you to inflict injury to your soul from a physical point of view?
From a physical standpoint, no.
No. So, is he asking us to respond bodily here, or is when he's talking about our soul, is that just the essence of who we are?
That is just indeed the essence of who we are.
Right. So, he says, and your soul should respond and answer. Anah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, somebody answers an invitation. Isn't that what you should? Isn't that? I mean, it's hard to imagine that we are so stupid that God offers an invitation for us to meet, Mikra, and we're not smart enough to realize that, well, then we should probably answer and respond to the invitation. But just in case.
Just in case we are that stupid.
Just in case, you know, he doesn't want us to have to interpret.
Right.
He wants to make this really simple. I mean, this is the path to him, so let me lay it down and make it really simple. You should answer and respond to my invitation. And you should appear before and approach the feminine manifestation of my light, the Isha, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates you to approach Yahweh. Pretty clear instruction, isn't it? Would you have any difficulty looking up the Hebrew word Isha, or Ana, or Karab? Kirk, it's a fairly simple question. But the following words, are they uncommon in Hebrew? In Yahweh's vocabulary, are they extraordinarily common and therefore easy to define? Haya.
No, this exists.
This exists. Yeah, exists.
Yeah, that's the conversation with Moshe.
Right. So exists. Okay, exists as. Then Kodesh.
Kodesh, set apart.
Yeah. Yeah. Used maybe 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah, and then with...
I am probably used a couple of thousand times. So these are two of the most common words. Mikra. Is this the first time we've seen the word Mikra?
No, Abraham called out, you know, constantly, because it's the covenant situation with the covenant, of course.
All right.
It's live,
Mikra,
live,
yes. Each of his seven invitations to meet is called a Mikra. Yeah, it's a invitation to be called out. And is it a... Question mark as to what verb Mikra is based on? What actionable concept?
No.
Car, isn't it?
Car, yeah. Car, yeah.
And how often do you think Yahweh uses the verb kara? More than 1,000 times?
Well, he has a whole book of it.
Yeah, in fact, the book we're reading from is actually called kara.
Kara.
Yeah, called out. So that's not a hard word to define. It means it's an invitation to meet. It's a day devoted to reading and reciting. It means to summon, to proclaim, to welcome, to meet, to encounter. La, the preposition, means to approach.
Towards, move towards.
Yeah, move towards. Any debate on the meaning of the word?
No, and I'm sitting here looking at more lexicons than I can count. So.
Yeah. No question. So it is a day for us to meet with God. And it was, it is, and it always will be set apart, a day that is special, a day that we're drawn out of the world and drawn unto to Him. That's pretty clear. Okay, how about we move to the next sentence, because it, Christians and Muslims and socialist secular humanists are all universally ignoring this. So you've got all but about 5% at most of the planet's 7 billion people that are ignoring this. So let's just take some of the next words. Nephesh.
Nephesh is a soul.
Right.
Everybody
now
uses that word. They just don't use it as the Hebrew word, but they all know what a soul is.
Yeah, and nephesh is used also right around 1,000 times.
At least.
Yeah, so there is no confusion in nephesh is soul.
No.
It's your human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Shall respond and answer, Ana. Mm-hmm. Ana is one of those words, too, used probably 1,000 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Primary definition is to answer and respond, right?
Yes, and anyone could look those up, and they will tell you how many times it's used as well.
Right. So. Yeah, in fact, if you spent $20 for a Strong's lexicon, just the paper one, it tells you how many times every word is used, and you can look up when it's first used and verify the definition for yourself.
All right. It'll tell you where it's used and each cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
easy stuff to do. Now, in relationship to an invitation, is it the most natural thing to do with an invitation to answer and respond?
Yeah, everybody says RSVP, right?
Right. So when it follows, this exists as an invitation for you to be called out and meet on your behalf, and the next line is, and your soul should answer and respond. Isn't the primary definition of Ana fit the context?
Of course.
All right. Then this is not difficult,
simple,
right?
Simple. This is being told 101,
right,
or grammar school, if you wish.
Yeah. Karab is a Hebrew verb. It means to come, to draw near, to be present with, to appear before,
face
to approach.
To face, right. Uh-huh.
Right.
Face to face, yeah.
So, and your soul should respond appearing before, approaching, drawing near to, being present with. Now, again, that's probably used 500 times as a verb. No question what it means.
Yeah.
All right, and then so who is it? What is it that we're supposed to, our soul, not our physical being, our soul, is being encouraged to answer an invitation to appear before and approach, and the next word is Isha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Isha, it's, if you go look at the word, what is the primary definition of Isha?
Feminine, mother.
Mm-hmm. And
also light, because
that's where
they turn on a dime and try to call it a burnt offering.
Right. In fact, Ish is the Hebrew word for radiant energy, for light, for fire, isn't it?
Warmth, yeah.
Yeah, the warmth of a fire. Yahweh referred to his presence on top of Mount Horeb as an Ish, which is the masculine word for fire. But when you conclude a word with a hey, what are you doing? You're making it feminine, aren't you?
It turns it into a feminine noun, yes.
Mm-hmm. When Yahweh meets with Abraham, and he's talking about walking with him and talking with him and being with him generally. When he's doing that, does he use a Hebrew word that is translated individual in that regard? Are you familiar with the Hebrew word ish?
Ish, yes.
Yeah. In fact, ish is the beginning of ish.
Israel.
Individuals who engage in individual with God. So he refers to himself when he's meeting with in person with Abraham, developing the covenant relationship. I mean, there's seven different encounters between Yahweh and Abraham as the covenant relationship is developed. He refers to himself as an ish, doesn't he, as an individual.
Right.
And so what happens if you add a hey to the end of ish, individual?
A feminine manifestation.
Yeah, now it's a feminine individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you add the hey to the Hebrew word son, ben, and you have bina?
Bina is a girl.
Hmm. Feminine manifestation, right. So the hey, consistently, you want to get son to daughter. You want to get male individual to female individual. you add a hey to the end of the word, and that is how a word is changed to feminine in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Is ish the Hebrew word for fire, for radiant energy and light?
Fiery light, sure.
Yeah, fiery light. Radiant light.
Radiant.
Okay, so, and then Isha would be the feminine manifestation then of yeah, it was light.
Right.
If Ish is the masculine manifestation of his light, Isha would be the feminine manifestation of his light. Why do you think that God, who revealed himself on Mount Horeb to the children of Israel, to the very audience he's speaking to here, as the Ish, a word that is interchangeable for individual, male individual, and masculine word for fire, and he refers to his presence there on the top of Horeb as Ish, why do you think that he adds the letter hey to the end of ish here to convey feminine individual and the feminine word for fiery light?
Well, he's teaching. Keep in mind, he's teaching, and he's trying to convey a metaphor for what a mother does, covers. And we are going to be, like when we celebrate today, we'll be a lot of discussion. We'll read and recite, and we'll eat because it's a joyous day to me. It's a day when everything's forgiven. So
there's no requirement for us to do anything today than to
read and recite,
to answer the invitation and come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of his life.
So you're using a covering, which allows us, and if you keep it in context of when this day is really coming and what's going to happen in 2033 physically in this world, those who are coming to that light and are covered, they can continue on forever.
Right.
If you come into
the presence of a light, you're going to radiate the light. What happened with Moshe when he came down from Mount Horeb after spending the time with Yahweh, scribing the Torah?
Took about 40 days, if I recall, for the light to diminish.
Right. So he radiated the light, right?
Totally radiated the light, yeah.
Right, he glowed.
Glowed.
What happened with Yosha when he said, you know, I'm going to transfigure myself into my more normal identity on the Mount of Transfiguration? What did he look like?
Light.
When he returns as Yahweh, and he says he's coming back, and he defines the way that he's coming back, saying the whole world's going to see him at one time. Why is it that the whole world can see him at one time?
Because he would be brighter than the sun, really.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Light. So he's inviting us to come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of his light, is what he has done here. And that's our adoptive mother, who purifies us. Fire does that. Enlightens us. Fire does that. Who elevates us. You look at the direction that the heat and the smoke go on a fire. That's why Yahweh loves that metaphor. It purifies. It enlightens. It elevates.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are concepts that are associated with the light of a fire. And when the fire is burning, are we kept warm?
Yes, we are. We're nourished by the food that we cook on the thing.
Right. A food is more nourishing and helpful and healthful when it's cooked, isn't it?
So
it provides nourishment, and it's a fire of a crucible that separates that which is valuable from the dross, correct?
Dross, right, exactly.
Right. And the light of a fire enables us to be observant. That's how we can read and recite the Torah at any time, night or day, is that it lightens our homes, doesn't it?
And it's a great picture for Sukkot coming up, sitting around the campfire.
Right. Exactly. And how are you going to attend this this celebration of camping out with Yahweh unless your relationship is reconciled with him?
You can't.
You can't.
That's the tragedy of the thing that these people don't get. This is the plan. There is no other plan. There is no other path. He's very clear.
Right. And yet most people, including the Pope and all of those Catholics that will join him, are wholly and completely ignorant of what God said or what he's offering. And will ignore this invitation to mate and will think instead that they have a church.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reference to a church. Never is there a word even remotely akin to a church from Yahweh or Yosha.
The first tablet annihilates any question of any of those things. You cannot have that around me, so it ain't going to be around him. Come on.
Right. So if you're associated with a church, you aren't associated with him. He doesn't have one.
I'm associated with him.
He's talking about his mikra.
Yeah.
Or in the plural, mikra.
Mikra.
right?
Yes, sir.
And you know, to make it plural, you add the Y at the end of it, which is Yahweh's hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like all the YMs, isn't the Y?
Yeah. And it's not just Yahweh's hand; it is also the Ma, which
your
is the
mother. Yeah, the
right,
water,
which is correct. The hand and the you're born of water and you're born of spirit and you're purified with the universal solvent, which is water.
Water.
Life emerged from water.
Water.
We're born
again,
of out of yeah. water.
Yeah.
So to make it plural, you add the Yahweh's hand and the symbol for our spiritual mother for life.
It's a beautiful story.
I mean, it is a beautiful story.
Beautiful story.
Yeah. So Yahweh's invited us to a day of reconciliations on the 10th day of the 7th month. That will begin tonight at sunset. It exists as a set-apart and cleansing invitation to meet and to be called out, to read and to recite, for you to approach. And your soul should respond and answer this invitation, appearing before and approaching the feminine manifestation of His light unto Yahweh, to approach Yahweh. Then he says, so that's what he wants us to do. That's what he's inviting us to do. But he does say, there's something I don't want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because this day is all about being enveloped in the set-apart spirit's garment of light.
Yes.
Do not perform, do not profit financially from any of the service of the heavenly messenger. This is malaka. Again, malak is the Hebrew word for spiritual messenger, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you add the hey at the end of it, what does it become?
A feminine messenger.
Right. So it's malak with an ah at the end of it, making it the service of the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's message.
Right.
The counselor.
Right.
The one who enlightens us.
Mm-hmm.
The one who nourishes us.
The one who empowered us when we, if you remember, the fourth mikra.
Right. So don't perform. Don't profit from, financially gain from, any of the service provided by the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's heavenly message. On this, and what does he call this day? Does he call this any other day we shouldn't be discriminating? Or does he call this day Esim?
Right, yes.
Esim means corporeal.
Mm-hmm.
It means healing and invigorating. It means very substantive. It means life-sustaining and empowering. It's the same word that is used in Hebrew to describe a skeleton. You know, that's not a disembodied skeleton, but how your skeletal framework is what keeps you together, enables you to function, enables you to stand upright, to walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very essence of you know, you take your skeleton away, we're just a blob on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Can't move.
Yeah, that's why we always say get a backbone.
Yeah, that's right. Backbone. Right. This is an Esim day. Life-sustaining and empowering. Essential day. Indeed, key, this day of reconciliation, Yom Kippurim. You know, I don't know why, when Yahweh always renders it in the plural, that Jews call it Yom Kippur. Why not Kippurim?
Yeah, why is that?
Why is that? Why do they call it a day of affliction when it's Kippur means to reconcile?
Yeah.
To pardon, to forgive.
Yeah, why, you don't go up to somebody and slap them and say, I forgive you. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, people are just being stupid. For you to be, and then he, just in case, you know, he thought, you know, I'm going to be speaking to people that maybe are not native to Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
that are going to need me to define my terms for them. So since this is the essential day, a life-sustaining day for us to meet with and be welcomed into God's company, maybe I'm going to go so far, since I've called this day the day of Kippurim, that I will the next word I'm going to use is the verbal form of the name, Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kippur and Kippurim, exactly the same word, just with the YM added to the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You ever looked up the word Kapar, K-P-R, and a Hebrew lexicon?
Well, I'm sure I looked up Kippurim, so I had to root, yeah.
Yeah. It means to reconcile,
mm-hmm.
to release from guilt,
yeah,
to have one's offenses annulled, to be pardoned, to be forgiven.
Great word.
Yeah. So what is the purpose of the day of reconciliations when it's based upon the verb kapar?
To be set free from your guilt and covered and be part of his family again. So, I mean,
yeah.
It pulls you right into it.
To have your relationship reconciled. Right. To enjoy what it means to be forgiven, to be pardoned. Why wouldn't you celebrate that? Here's the creator of the universe saying, yeah, I know that you've got some faults. But this day, if you'll just answer this invitation to meet with me, I'll do this for you. Now, when he's saying that he doesn't want us to do the work of the feminine manifestation of his message, and then he explains what this day is, maybe, just maybe, the feminine manifestation of his message, the set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh, is responsible for forgiveness, for pardons, for reconciliation, you think?
As opposed to?
Or Google search research. So Yahweh has told us that the day of reconciliations is a day that we are pardoned and forgiven. He says don't do the work of the feminine manifestation of his light, whom he explains is our set-apart spiritual mother. I don't know how he could make it any clearer. In fact, he even says it's a day of reconciliations for you to be pardoned and forgiven, kafar, the basis of kaparam, in the presence of pana, Yahweh, your God. So this spiritual manifestation of his light that we're approaching, he says that it's in the presence of Yahweh, our God, that we are being forgiven. So doesn't he therefore tell us that this light, this feminine manifestation of light, is him? It's his presence?
Sure.
And that the purpose of this is to be forgiven?
Right.
So that our relationship can be reconciled?
Yeah, if you're covered with light, there's no darkness, therefore no
mm-hmm.
sin. And
right.
That's what we're looking for?
Right. All the darkness is obliterated with light. And with light, unlike the darkness, we're no longer blind. We can see, which means we can observe. We can pay attention. We can look. We can know. You know the way if it's light. When you're blind and stumbling in the dark, that's when you go astray.
Mm-hmm. Now, the difference in the way that the first time I ever read this, I was confused because I was thinking, well, wait a minute. He says that we can read and recite on this day.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is absolutely fine. That's not
right.
The job of the Ruach Kodesh.
She doesn't read and recite.
No, she doesn't read and recite. She is covering people with light and
mm-hmm.
and restoring, doing the real work.
Enlightening them.
We're just talking about it. Yeah, we're
right.
just talking about it.
When we read and recite, which Yahweh says is the purpose of this day, then she can nurture us and envelop us and enlighten us
right.
based upon what he has shared.
As opposed to the people who are running around saying, this is where you get reconciled, i.e. popes and religion.
Yeah, of course.
Now, that's a big, big warning to them.
Right. So this pope who's going to celebrate a mass and canonize a saint, do two things that Yahweh said do not do. This is directed right at him and
right.
everyone who would trust him. It says, because any soul, every soul, all souls who, by way of the relationship, do not respond to the summons and answer this invitation on this essential, life-sustaining and empowering day, these shall be cut off and separated from the family. How many families does Yahweh have?
Yes, but one family.
Was this Am family written in the singular or the plural?
I'm pretty sure it's in the singular.
Yeah, there you go. How many family covenants does he have?
He has one family covenant, not two.
Yeah, so if you're cut off from this family, is it possible to have a relationship with God if you're estranged from him?
No, you cannot.
So if you're cut off and separated, karat, excommunicated, banished, uprooted, exterminated, banished, and expelled from him, is it possible that you could end up in his presence?
No, totally impossible.
So he's saying if you don't answer this invitation, which not one Christian amongst the billion or so Christians will do,
right,
over 2 billion Christians on the planet, if you don't answer this invitation, there is no chance whatsoever that you're going to have a relationship with God or be in his presence.
Yeah, if you had a rational mind and you read this, you'd no longer be a Christian. You couldn't possibly.
Right. You don't, you know, if you mention Yom Kippurim, or just Yom Kippur, in front of a Christian, they're going to say that's that Jewish thing.
I have a friend who's a Jewish Jew too.
Oh wow! Yeah, when you canceled your class, yeah, they said, oh, I have a friend that's a Jew too. Oh great!
Yeah, something along that line. Yeah.
Listen, you know, you might say, you know, I wish I was a Jewish. I wish I was a literal descendant of Abraham. To my knowledge, I'm not. But you know, I'm delighted to be adopted and therefore declared Yahuda, one who relates to and is related to Yah. But the fact is, Yahweh never once said this is a Jewish holiday.
No.
And he most certainly didn't say to afflict yourself on it. Nor did he say this is a fast.
No.
He just said, I'm offering you an invitation to meet. And on this day, I'm encouraging you to answer that invitation and come into the presence of the feminine manifestation of my life, the set-apart spirit. And in so doing, to be forgiven so that you can enter my presence.
Wow.
Wow. It's as simple as that. An invitation of God. Don't you think it would be in our interest to pay attention and to respond?
I certainly do.
Me as well.